Good morning.
Morning. Welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists online. We continue our studies in theosophy, and we would like to welcome you to our Sunday morning session, where we'll be taking up this summer the eternal verities that are found, are the writings of Robert Crosby. So each Sunday morning we'll be looking at those ideas. And this morning we're looking at the foundation of religion, his article on that. But then on Wednesday evenings, all summer long, we're going to have an exciting class on the Bhagavad Gita. And if it's not exciting, you're not trying hard enough. Because it's certainly a study in ourself, and that always is interesting. So that will be on Wednesday evenings from 7:30 to 8:30, promptly. And then on Sundays, oh, not Sundays, we did Sunday, Fridays, we have a sort of an open forum of questions and answers and or conversation, never any answers, that we're taking up the studies of B.P. Wadia and his approach to theosophy, or his understanding of theosophy, which is more of the heart doctrine explained in a different way. So this morning, we gather as a unity, as a body of thinkers that are trying to keep before the public these ideas. Now, we don't do this as a group, but it seems that we are a group, but we do this individually. And we just so happen to find a group of people who are like-minded. And this is what our association is, a like-minded students that are keeping before the public this idea of universal brotherhood, that it is a true understanding of the self and our unity. But this is not an organization. There's no leaders. We come as independent, free-thinking individuals that we share in these ideas, and we discuss them openly and freely, and we try to digest them to the best of our ability. But we welcome anyone to this association who thinks along the lines of helping humanity. So this help for humanity is really, as far as we're concerned, is changing their attitude, changing their focus on what's real. And we live in an age of great materialism, and we are standing here shouting, that is not what is real. It may look real, we may think it's real, but the enduring part of our nature is unseen. And we are not standing still, we are moving. So we welcome everyone this morning to this class. Now, we're taking up the study in the eternal verities. You may have, I don't know how, how you have these copies or this publication or online, but we'll look at this from a format of paragraphs, and it's for easier for us to follow if we just for the beginning we'll sort of highlight the first five paragraphs, and therefore the last four paragraphs where we'll leave open-ended and at your perusal, or you could ask questions concerning that as well. And I'd like to remind everyone that we have a center of focus of asking our questions, but everyone is welcome to participate in this conversation. We'll just try to guide it and lead it so that we can hopefully come away with a better understanding of ourselves in terms of religion, at least. Okay, so we're going to have a student has volunteered to highlight the first five paragraphs of The Foundation of Religion by Robert Crosby.
Okay, here goes a humble effort to be succinct. Good luck. The article starts out with the notion that religions and all the masks of God are the creations of man, the meaning maker. The power within man to create images is profound. And yet many humans project greatness and potential from inside, but they put it on an external. True religion, Crosby writes, bonds all entities, man and the kingdoms below and above. And he offers again our consideration of the three fundamental propositions of the philosophy, all aspects or descriptors of that one absolute truth, one source. He writes that the deific essence is the one true reality, the one cause, the one knower, and is the basis of all the creative power of thought. The creative thinker is the true nature of self, the basis of all action, and is resident within each human. He says that knowledge is religion, that it comes from within, in the true nature of man, and it's been tested across generations of thinkers, seers who discovered the absolute essence of all in nature from within themselves.
Okay, there are some ideas. What do you have any questions or any comments you'd like to make as we begin? How does this tie down with our concept of God and religion?
CBW.
Yeah, question.
CBW.
Yes, please, CBW.
Star 6. Hello.
Go ahead.
CBW.
Go ahead.
Well, it seems that we have to stop and think. Listen to that word. We are aware of everything around us, within us, and so forth. Then we must not be these bodies. They must be the instruments we use on this plane. But those three fundamental ideas point to a single one conscious. Never was, not, and always will be. But that's difficult to think about. How would you advise someone who had just heard these fundamentals to begin his search for that one unity within and without? Never was, not, and always will be. Language that people don't generally hear except at our front door.
Well, we would think that you can only begin where you are and begin there. And we are told that in the beginning of our studies that we should sort of give up all of our preconceived notions and try to let them go and try to look at these ideas with a unbiased mind. Now, you know, and that is the struggle. When you find truth, how do you know it? And secondly, how do you apply it? And which is what we seem to be all trying to do, is to apply that truth. Now, the knower of that truth, that consciousness, exists in all of us. But why is it so different? That's a question. Yes, SL.
What does the word religion mean? What is the actual meaning of that word?
Unite back to, you know, or gather together. And what do we see religions being materialized as? Something outside of us. But what unites us is what is within us, is that tie of that universal consciousness, of that shared reality that we are all one. And materialism is, it highlights the separateness, because that's what materialism is. Yes, TK.
Well, in the second paragraph, he makes the statement, religion is a bond uniting men together, which was, of course, just said. So religion is a bond uniting men together. And he also says on the bottom of page 2, knowledge is
what
religion.
Paragraph?
Page 2, the second from the bottom line. Knowledge is religion. So religion is a bond uniting all men together, and knowledge is religion. So what kind of knowledge is it that is the bond that unites all men together? Could we investigate that? Could we talk about that?
Well, that is the great duty of the self. How do we care for the self? Now, we're not saying that personal self, because that's what we've been devoted to. Now we're being asked to, there's a higher self or an eternal nature that we carry from life to life. And the more we manifest it in a life is the more harmonious that incarnation is. So, we are the product of all that we've been, but not of all that we can be. You know, that's why why the conscious mind needs to put before it an ideal that it is always has sort of like projected before itself. And we talk about virtues, we talk about values, we talk about perfectibility, masters. You know, we need to have those ideas in our consciousness, because we're reading a study that they were conducting, and part of the realization after they were compiling is that people had this feeling of they were immortal, and they didn't know where that came from. They thought it was an aberration, but we are immortal, but we just, it's not a frivolous statement. You know, if with that statement comes karma, reincarnation, morality, you know, humanity. Yes, TK.
Well, actually, as you were speaking, we were following up in that same paragraph, we noticed, so if religion is the bond, and in this paragraph, knowledge is religion, he's saying they came to know through that true religion is a knowledge of one's own self in that same paragraph, and that their knowledge is an absolute accurate knowledge of the essence of everything in nature. So that's what it seems he's tying together, is that the bond is what we all have in common, which actually is who we all are in essence, which is that supreme reality behind everything that we give a mask to. And the effort here, I guess, in this paragraph or in this essay is to climb past it and discuss it and look at ourselves from that perspective rather than the other way around, I guess.
We think that's exactly what's trying to be expressed. We all have our ideas of religion. Again, I'm sure all of us have been examining that and trying to fetter out the truth that was in those ideas that we were fostered with as children. And we find that much of the wisdom that we were given, and it was given the name of a religion, was really a basic understanding of ourselves. You know, that of our unity, of our great power. You know, that we doubt so much that we have this great power, and we need it's said to nurture that in each other.
Can we ask a question?
You sure can.
Yeah, it's paragraph 6, I think. And it kind of goes along with what was just being said. He says, a belief is always a statement of ignorance, which we think is pretty emphatic. If we believe, we do not know. If we know, there is no occasion for belief. Well, what if you believe in something that you know is true? Then there's no need for belief. We just thought that the first sentence is always a statement of ignorance. We thought that was pretty strong.
Well, consider the idea of a belief. Is it something that someone else told you? You heard from someone else, you know, most beliefs are, if not all of them are sort of like like your parents believed it and you don't know why, but you believe it, but you know, we've never examined it. And, belief is not bad. It is just what it is, though. It's ignorance. It's not it's if you either know something or you don't.
Yes. We guess what he's saying then, if you say you believe in something, that's ignorance. But if you say you believe in something that you have studied and you know to be true, then it's not belief. Is that basically it?
Well, no, if you studied something and you think it to be true, you're not sure. You have to know it's true. That's the whole thing. It's you have to prove to yourself that this is true. Somewhere in your heart, in your logic, in your, you know, you have to, something has to be verified within your nature.
Therein lies the question. How do you make the differential between what you believe and what you know to be true? That's the big question. And we're just stumbling around it, but we're not addressing the issue. Is what do we build our foundation of knowledge on? Okay. It has to be something that we have some proof of, some observation, some repeating observation, some personal experience, some personal authentication that this is true. Otherwise, it's a belief. Okay? And there's one other thing you have to recognize too, is that knowledge evolves just like everything else. So it's not a permanent thing. It increases, it expands as you learn.
We think that contribution is quite in line with what we're discussing. That
well, one thing I'd like to add from my own personal experience, in that part of my experience of having cancer is being in a cancer support group where there are people who are suffering significant pain. Okay. And so the question for them becomes, what have I done to deserve this? Okay. And I'm trying to say to them, don't get attached to the pain. You are not your body. You are something that resides within the body, and to explore that idea. And that is a huge leap for the average person to even conceive of the fact that they have a spirit that resides within their body. What is missing here more than anything else in this discussion and in life itself is a structure that says your being, your spirit, your soul, your body function on these seven principles. And that's what we need to be sharing with people. Even sharing the idea that the body and the mind and spirit are separate is a huge leap in itself. So I think that's the direction we need to go.
We need to rationally consider what we're saying to these to people that are in pain, and the only remedy is compassion. We have to be as compassionate as we possibly think we can be, and let that lead us, let our compassion lead us. The idea of death is so bound up with our idea of religion, if I do have a soul, what's going to happen to it? Where is it going to go? And the fact that we keep on saying we are eternal beings, this is but one incarnation of a blink of the eye in eternity, that we have to put ourselves in perspective, that we cling to life. Okay, and that's just the reality. The love that we generate, things cling to us, and we become attached to them. So that's where our pain and suffering derives from.
We get attached to life.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes.
You know. Hello, CBW.
Yes, you know, before you, CBW. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, when we came, our vocabulary, is that a new word? Our vocabulary, although it may have been very, very, very educational, very large, but the materialistic properties of the language we use is what keeps us back. Here at the lodge, we learn how to speak from within, without, not from the dictionary by itself. And as long as we keep repeating errors and everything, that's good. Keep repeating the mistakes, because the words from the teaching, necessity is the mother of invention. Ah, now we go back to that little yellow pamphlet. It says, being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge as set forth in the declaration, I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate. Calls for no obligation other than that which I myself judge. So first thing we have to know, what does it mean by the term independence, devotion?
Well,
there's where we begin.
Well, that's where we are. Every one of us here are independently devoted. What attracts us are the ideas. And that is what attracts all true thinkers, our ideas. Ideas rule the world. So these ideas in particular that are the foundation of our religion, of any religion, is realizing the true nature of the self. And we say self as meaning the higher self. That aspect of our eternal nature that we come in contact with, and is our consciousness. And by becoming aware of that perceiver or that thinker, we can become more impersonal in our interactions or our understanding of life itself. We're on a journey. And we're all just seem to be on this together. Yes, TK.
So the issue that was brought up was where Mr. Crosby talks about if you believe, that really is a statement of ignorance. So we think that one should take that as one student of theosophy to another student of theosophy. If we go out and tell a religious fanatic that his belief in that prophet or that savior is ignorant, that's the last thing the theosophist needs to be doing. Thus, the issue of compassion comes in. But as far as knowledge, like how do you know that it's not the truth, right? You know, we could say, you know, my car is red, I know it. If you don't believe it and it's red right there, I'm right, you're wrong, right? And we can talk from our experience. I know something because I objectively saw this yesterday. We know that. But the issue here, when we're talking about the great questions in life, how can we say we know it rather than we believe it? The way we can do that is through education, Without education, we're ignorant. And the education, the philosophical, theosophical education that we build for ourselves, when we have a framework and there's a new concept or an idea coming in, either it fits or it doesn't. We're going to make things yes or no, black and white. Either it fits or it doesn't. You reflect on it. You see how it works. And if the result of accepting it as a truth helps you understand everything else that in your world more clearly, then from the individual subjective perception, one reasonably can say, I know that to be true, even though, and be right, even though someone far wiser can look and see where he's coming from and see where perhaps there's a flaw. But we think that Mr. Crosby is making the inference to make the effort, make the mental effort, make the spiritual effort, to put forth the effort to understand things as they are, as you can perceive them. To believe things implies, I heard him say this, therefore I accept it as true. That's not the basis for independent devotion. It's not the basis of self-reliance, and it's not a basis of growing in theosophy. One has to take responsibility for his own ideas, and it's okay to say, I don't know yet, but it's a complete different, it's different in saying I don't know or I don't know that yet than I believe it, you know? So we'll leave it at that.
Yes, and the only contribution we can make to that is play the game with yourself.
Yeah, it's all about what's going on in here, head and heart. Has to be both. Can't just be heart, because then where's the structure, as JD was talking about? Has to be both. They have to both fit together in a framework.
Yes.
And we would add one more thing. And we've said it before, the neatest thing about our interactions with theosophical students from age 30, literally to 100, is the willingness and the openness for anyone who's been studying this philosophy to hear something new from someone younger or very different and realize, you know what? I've been thinking this way for 30 years. Wait a minute. You're right. I got to rethink that whole thing through. That's a beautiful thing. I mean, you're never going to hear a bishop say that, you know, but that's the only way that we grow, is if we're open and then compare and contrast within ourselves. But don't believe it. Learn it and know it and make adjustments accordingly.
SL.
Do I exist or do I just believe I exist? Do I know I exist or do I believe I exist? If I can't answer that question, I can't get any bigger questions answered.
Well, you want to help us with that question? Please. Well, let's see. What do you think?
You ask think your wife.
Excuse us?
I said, ask your wife, do you exist?
But then I'm depending on authority outside myself.
Okay. Little theosophical parlay.
Isn't it said that in order to know the self, thou hast to know the self before thou knowest the self of all. And HPB says, in order to know God's self, you have to know your own self. It's like trying to teach the person in the desert what the ocean is like. You have to first teach them what a drop of water is like, and then they can begin to understand the greater picture. So we would say that the foundation of religion is the same as the foundation of psychology or soul or self-knowledge, that if you can go through life knowing that you exist, you're bringing into different faculties of self-awareness, direct perception, than believing you exist. I mean, this is an epistemology question that's been discussed for 1,000 years among different philosophers, and it was very prominent a few hundred years ago. Is our idea of self just the product of our senses, what we believe to be true, or is there a real inner being? And even in certain religions, the belief or the understanding of an immortal self is considered to be an illusion. So it's a serious question. If we cannot know, what when we say we know that we exist, what are we talking about? What kind of knowledge are we bringing to it that is irrefutable, that we know, and it's just a matter of our wife tells us, or our friends tell us, or we read in a book that we exist. How do we know that? And if we can answer that question, then we can understand how we can know that God exists, or the universal essence exists.
Well, the analogy of fire and flame is we're a flame. You know, we are light. What's the little saying that we teach our children? Children of light, as you go forth into the world, seek to do gentle service to all that lives. There's one idea. Anyone else?
Wait, we have one.
Yes, please.
Well, we know that when people have amnesia, they know that they may not remember their name, and they may not remember where they live, anything, their family. They may forget everything, but they continue to have that sense of I am. So couldn't we say that that's an answer to this question? That we do exist if you have no clue about anything else about your life, but you still have that concept of I am.
Isn't what is that? What is that I am?
Isn't that the self-conscious portion of us?
Is it? Maybe.
It is believed to be so, that self-awareness, that consciousness was expressed in the Bible as I am that I am. Which was, in my opinion, was an expression of the ultimate consciousness. Again, in the book, The Master and His Emissary, they talk about the functioning of the brain and the problem that the scientists have with the concept of consciousness. They know it exists. They can't measure it. And that's their problem, is that they cannot compare it to something else. It is unique in itself. So if you are even aware that you are conscious, then you are. It's a circulatory argument, yes, but that's where it lies.
So that the knowledge is direct perception of an eternal, universal, enduring reality. We can have knowledge of things that are temporary and personal. Before it was mentioned that if I have an internal experience, that's knowledge. It's knowledge. But how about the individual who believes from certain things, experiences within themselves, knows they're talking to God because they have a direct experience within themselves? Is that knowledge of truth? Because they experience it. So knowledge here is very specific. The foundation of religion is the direct experience of a truth that transcends time, space, nations, races. It's universal. And we think that the very idea that people all over the world, regardless of their backgrounds, are searching or searching for a God idea or have a God idea is evidence of that internal notion or internal awareness that that exists, and they're trying to formulate it in their mind. It's an inherent reality among every human being. They just express it or think about it in different ways. So our task is to try to get beyond those differences to perceive that enduring reality, that soul wisdom or spiritual knowledge, whatever you'd want to call it.
Foundation. The foundation of religion, you know, the enduring quality of life itself.
CBW.
Go ahead.
Well, even as a little boy, and as we grew older, when among adults discussing very serious things, many of them would say, "Oh, now I see what you mean." Well, you know, as a little boy, what does he mean by that? He sees what he wasn't talking about anything that I can see. So there is a good example. We are not external. We use externalities in order to help nature or to pass along the teachings. So when we say, "Oh, I see what you mean," we have to go to the library and find texts. There's a glossary in the library, and also older students who can help us younger students understand, look within, thou art Buddha. What does he mean by that? Oh, now I see what you mean. This is a very plain example, and we discover all at once our own ignorance and begin to study. And we are attracted to the lodge by its distinct issue of independent devotion. That is something we learn how to do. We're still infants, at least I feel that way. So we go by what the Declaration says, what we hear from writings such as this. You got to think about them. Then you can say, "I see what you mean."
Well, we hope that we all can say, we all do say to ourselves, "I see."
Michael, you have to unmute. Michael, unmute.
Unmute. That was weird.
Am I on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
go ahead.
Yeah, we have a pretty basic question here. What is it about religion or any kind of a belief in a higher essence? What is it in the human being that needs to have this knowledge about whether it's an internal God belief or an external? What is it that we have in us that needs to know about this?
It's what's in us that needs to know about itself. It's spirit. It needs to know itself. And its life's journey is that realization. You know, we are light. We are consciousness, and that consciousness is colored by the ideas that we hold to be true. And that's why we are constantly said, look for universals. And if you have particulars, take them back to a universal beginning. See if it holds true. It that's why universal brotherhood, that idea is that all kingdoms of nature are organized together to help that kingdom above it. And everything is moving toward manhood and godhood. Everything is returning back to spirit. But on its journey, on our journey, we are impressing all of life. And we are. Look at these bodies. Look at these bodies. And they're made up of all the kingdoms. So that's consciousness.
So can we say that if we look at this idea of God, theosophically speaking, because we are all part of that deific essence, then this search would be for ourselves, because we are that deific essence, and our journey is to realize that, and then we will know about this God idea, we're at a loss to figure out a word. But so because we are that, it's like we're looking for ourselves.
Yes, well, it's the analogy of the sun. We are a ray of that great sun. So that means we are beings of light that have descended into darkness, matter, and now is reascending again into spirit. We're on a cyclic journey to spirit, back to spirit. You know, as our consciousness, as I think we said before, it's constantly expanding. Our knowledge is constantly expanding. The reality is, though, that we have all that knowledge. It's just all dammed up within us, you know, through the false ideas that we've adopted that makes us unable to see the truth because of ideas that we hold somewhere within us that block our true understanding. And it's just ideas. So how do you let go of ideas? Well, find better ones and do it. You can do it that way and keep on finding better ones until you found the best or what you think is, but always looking, always on that quest. Even now, checking and testing and verifying everything that we know, everything that we hear that's new and exciting, check, test and verify. The turmoil we're living in, what's the reality? JS.
Well, sometimes the process feels like trying to nail Jell-O on the wall. And trying to discuss a sevenfold nature with someone who still is struggling over, how do I know I exist? What's the difference between I am that and I, me, my? So where does the use of analogy and correspondence come in? You know, is it helpful to say to someone else, we really can't see air and space and force, but we certainly know what wind is and what the effects are. Is it helpful to say there is a sevenfold evolution? Think about the white light that goes through a prism and emerges as this array of sevenfold color and nuance of color. Is that what we can do to help somebody else?
Perhaps. And perhaps you can tell some people that, you know, love your neighbor. Stop fighting that war that's creating all this misery in your life. Do you not see that you're creating your very existence? There's so many ways you can talk to a friend, and only you know best. And if it works, you say you've been blessed to help someone. If it doesn't, you run. Yes, SL.
So the foundation of something, of religion, is something that we have to know for ourselves. If religion is tying everything together in one whole, we have to ask ourselves, my idea of deity, if I live it, if I think it, if I act on it with others, is it bringing me closer to one another, to all of life, or is it separating me from life, from other people? And if that idea is uniting us, is making us feel more one, then it's a true foundation of religion. If it's separating us, it's something else. It's not religion. It's dogma, it's a theology, but it's not religion in the true sense of the word. So we have to test, check, and verify it for ourselves. That's the knowledge. To not just have the internal perception, but to be willing to apply it, test it out in real life, in the effect it has. Just like we know air exists because we experience the wind, or we experience the effects of it.
Again, we always go back to the idea of cause and effect. That is the basis of understanding for most of us, that if we see on the physical plane that we are creating a reaction to our actions, it doesn't take much to see how in the feeling plane or that astral, how our causes and effects create. So there's many ways that in our own mind that we need to verify. And we do this by small pieces. You know, things begin to weave themselves together. Because remember, this is a complete philosophy. Everything is joined together. Everything is a web of life. Life is a web, our feelings are a web, nature is a web, everything is a web, and we're connected together. So, yes, a foundation in the unity that we can engender. It's...
CBW.
Yes, CBW.
Well, we're pretty old, old fella. Yet we find, no matter how long we have been coming, meetings and so forth, that we have to rely on that declaration, the words in it. And they use words, the basis for union, wherever. similarity of aim and purpose and teaching. And it regards who are engaged in the true service of humanity, it welcomes to its cessation those who are in accord. So sometimes when we pick up the book or the part and read it and so forth, we have to go back and rely on that declaration. It's very subtle means for grasping what we read in the text, the friendly philosopher and so forth. And I repeat a statement that we made earlier, that we used to hear the elders in the family say, oh, now I see what you mean. But they were talking about what they saw within, not what they heard. So even though the documents we have are difficult, they seem difficult, we always have to remember, in spite of what our social standing may be, we have to become as little children again and try to grasp the ideas and know that as soon as you grasp a few, 10 others come up, which you don't grasp, and you have to keep up the work. And as I said, use the declaration as a dictionary. Then you may even go use Webster sometimes if you have to. But that's the materialistic way of looking at things, but it can sure wake you up. And where did I see something like, oh, in the ULT Declaration? And that's why we are emphasizing that, because looking within, how many of us are very, very skilled in? We learn in these rooms how to look within, and there is no horizon, it seems. The more we look, go ahead, further out we go.
Well, yes. I think that we are all children when we come to this philosophy. And by having that attitude of freshly discovering or rediscovering these ideas. But again, we are evolving from within outward. So it's the ideas that we hold, these ideas that we are considering this morning, that will help us better understand who and what we are. That is our journey. And then when we begin to understand who and what we are, how do we work with nature? How do we help humanity? How is there a truer realization of this self? How can we do this? Well, we think we've found an aid. I think it's each other. But above all, this philosophy, it unites us together in a feeling of brotherhood, that we may come and have ideas that we think may not fit in to these conversations, but be positive. Don't ever doubt yourself. If you have a question, talk about, and it will only blossom for you. That idea that to ask, and if you don't ask, you'll never receive. So if you want something, ask for it. And not only on the outer plane, but on the inner plane. And that humble asking, which is curiosity for the truth. So we hope you found these ideas helpful and stimulating. We welcome you to our next Zoom meeting on Wednesday evening, where everything that we talk about is formulated into one idea, and that's the Bhagavad Gita. That is the story of us and how it applies to us. And it's a roadmap for this journey. And it's saying to us, well, if you want some help, be this way. Or consider these ideas. Perhaps we can make a better world for all of us just by having an attitude adjustment. Well, the hour has come to an end. So again,
Michael, can we just want to welcome a new gentleman, Lucian T, who joined us late. We sent out an invite to him this morning, so I'm glad he was able to get it.
Well, good morning, Lucian.
Good morning. Thank you, everybody. It's such an honor and a pleasure to be here in the room with everybody.
Where are you calling from?
Philadelphia. I just moved to University City. I've been in Philadelphia, well, in and out of Philly for quite some time, 20 years now, maybe, about. I studied neuroscience at Temple University. Been working in the healthcare here, and been getting back to the roots of my studies in philosophy, theology, and it's really exciting. So I'm actually reading my second volume, The Secret Doctrine. Beautiful book. I do have the Bhagavad Gita and a bunch of other Manly P. Hall, The Secret Teachings. So I've been in this time of life, I've been getting back into my studies.
Well,
hopefully we'll be able to meet you when we open up then.
Indeed.
Welcome. I think we've met you now, Adrian.
We have.
Lucian.
Exactly.
I'm not saying your name again. Lucian?
Alucian.
Alucian.
Hmm?
Okay. Well, we welcome you, and we get so excited when we see a new face.
Thank you.
We have two new faces, and if we consider Jim a new face, we'll consider Jim a new face as well. But we welcome all of you, and we'll be here again on Wednesday evening from 7:30 to 8:30. If you want to be on our mailing list or our email list for our meetings, how can we get in touch? Or you can leave your email address online
or in touch
at our website.
We are in touch.
Everybody's on our Zoom list.
Well, how about that?
We're in touch, so you be in touch.
And I be in touch, yes.
Conversation.
And it's certainly exciting to have new faces amongst us. All right, so we'll end this meeting. If anybody has nothing else to contribute, we wish you
bye-bye.
Bye.
And peace.